WNST, Towson Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into the football off season, but there is no such thing. And if you've heard my rantings about Paul McCartney and the Angeloses and the Orioles and the Major League Baseballs and the Manfreds, you would know that I'm going to be turning my attention toward the NFL Combine if it actually happens. Eric at Home covers all things National Football League and has not for the All Juice team, although that is outstanding. You know, I appreciate your parenting, that you give out on Twitter and stuff like that. But in this particular case, football season, how are we going to separate the owners, the players, the agents, and Indianapolis, where it's sort of dead on arrival? This is your big thing, man, the Combine and the Senior Bowl and the draft, right?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, there's the big story this week is obviously the potential boycott of players of the Combine, which is, you know, not a story I anticipated coming. But, 150 different players, possibly, this is being reported. I've talked to a couple agents who are involved, and, you know, they're not happy with the conditions that are laid out by the NFL in terms of, you know, COVID protocols and these sort of extreme measures, these what they feel are draconian measures to kind of keep their players bubbled up for a week. And, you know, they're taking it very seriously, and they're saying, no, we don't believe this is necessary. And obviously the meaning of the Combine is different to different people. You know, usually the medical evaluation is a huge component of it. The interview process for all the teams meeting the players, some cases it's going to be the first time they speak with certain players. And then there's the workouts. Obviously those matter. I don't think
that's the public part though. That's right. That's the part the league can make money on the Underwear Olympics and put that out in front. And that's the most important part of the job interview, 'cause that has a measurement, right? We don't really know how you interviewed with the Bears. We know how you ran. We know how you lifted.
Right. Yeah. That's the public component. Absolutely. It takes, you know, a lot of calls from us to figure out, you know, who failed behind the curtain. But you can see obviously who ran well and at what weight and who ran quality three cone drills and all that. I think as the NFL kind of goes to more advanced metrics in terms of, you know, tracking body movement with GPS devices and things like that, you know, the Combine 40 is, you know, of lesser importance, I would say, to some evaluators. But it's still fun TV. I mean, it's still fun to guess, you know, who's going to run the fastest and who's going to have the disappointing times and all that. And so it has a value. I'll be fascinated to see whether we have this event or not. I suspect we will, but it may not be quite what we're expecting.
Eric at Home is here. He has, of course, covered the national. How many years have you covered in football? But the draft and the combine, you were going to combines before anybody ever went, right? I mean, I started going like in 06, and there were maybe like 100 media people there then. Yeah. But I mean, the combine itself and Indianapolis and what it's meant for the city, I went before it was cool. I went during the cool period. I've cooled off the last 5 years. I've just found so less value in it, so much less value, I should say, in it than I have in recent years. Where are you on that in the Senior Bowl? Feels like more people go to the Senior Bowl now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's more, but it's closing the gap if it's not. I honestly don't know those numbers, but, you know, Jim Nagy out of the Senior Bowl bragged about issuing 900 media credentials. If they did, I think about 450 of them didn't show up or were hiding in their hotel rooms. I could be wrong. My counting skills may be off on that, but the Combine's still a big event media wise, but as you pointed out, I mean, you know, especially now in our, it was canceled last year, but I can imagine the COVID protocols are not going to make it very media friendly this year. And you know, there's obviously talk about it moving to LA, but yeah, my first one I want to say was like 2003 or four. I mean, it's been a minute now.
It was incredible value back then, right? Just from a personal relationship and talking to people and making at a time when people wanted to make relationships. It doesn't feel like it's that way anymore.
Yeah. Well, Baltimore's own Ernie Accorsi came up to me. It was the first GM that I believe actually came up to me and knew who I was. And I was, you know, I don't even think I'd turned 30 at the time. So it was a little bit surprising. And he'd read something I wrote, or I don't remember exactly what happened, but you know, it's exactly that, right? This is where, you know, you always wonder, how do people build contacts? Well, it's at events like this that, you know, a lot of the access we get is off the record, behind closed doors, but you're making introductions, you're meeting people who you can call later and say, hey, is this report true? Or what are you guys thinking about this? And once you've built up that trust. But yeah, I mean, it's back then, it was that little conference room, you know, next to the cheerleaders convention that was going on next door. It was a little bit of a different experience than it is now, but
that is so true, dude. There was always a line to get pretzels and stuff in that lousy convention center. It was always 10 degrees outside. And Indy wasn't like fully like mature at that point. You know, you still had, they had the mouse traps to get to the mall, but you had to walk a couple. Now the whole thing's come down to the new stadium, right? Like they've built it all out and now they're going to leave Indy. I guess that's the point, Eric. I was in LA about a minute ago. I was telling Tenier and some guys, you know, I could still smell the cannabis floating in the air over Inglewood from that evening. They're moving the combine there. There's just no doubt. I mean, they're building a complex there that is going to be their own little outdoor wonderland, their own little Disney World.
Absolutely. It's a great chance for them to, A, show off the new digs out in L.A., home of the Rams, home of the NFL Network, right in the same facility there.
The world champion Rams.
The world champion Rams. Okay. This is going to be another layer, say, you know, obviously a reason to bring it back there. But, yeah, no, I mean, it saves NFL Network millions of dollars, I'm guessing, in travel costs and, you know, lugging equipment and stuff. Plus, you know, I think they obviously view it as more of a showcase TV event and are not concerned about, you know, the worries of the mid-80s when the Combine was created, which was, let's have a central location, you know, let's make it convenient and easy for everybody to get there as easy as possible, right? You know, I think that's pretty much out the window. I don't think they're concerned about the Jets, Giants, Patriots, Bills, you know, taking long flights to L.A. It's coming down the pike, and I think Indianapolis knows it, and it's tough because I think you and I are kind of romantics in terms of, you know, Indianapolis.
Dude, I'm romantic about everything. I'm romantic about everything, but I'm realistic about everything.
Sure.
And I know it's not coming. Dude, we just left the Super Bowl. They marched five players out for the media and had three of them talk at the same time. We had the NBA commissioner at the All-Star game basically say reporters are going away. The combine and the scouting thing and the thing that you do and the gambling side might still be more relevant than who said what in the locker room afterward, because I think that's over with.
I sadly do, too. I know that, you know, Lindsey Jones and some of the Pro Football Writers of America representatives are really fighting hard for access to return to pre-2020 levels. I've said all along since like August of that year, I said, they'll never go back. No one will. I mean, this isn't just a NFL thing, right? And they're going to use that as the excuse out of an abundance of caution and all that. I think it's hogwash. They've always looked for an excuse to limit more media. And this is a media soapbox thing. I get it if people are rolling their eyes, but you know, when it comes down
to it when we're all gone and there's one there to tell the truth anymore, right? Like literally, like the same baseball owners that are trying to break the union right now.
Yeah.
You think they don't want to put the media out of business? I mean, that prick took my press pass 16 years ago, 16 years ago.
Wow. Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think they're going to use any opportunity to, you know, to silence people or shackle people who fall out of line or who, you know, who sort of, you know, skirt the rules in their view or whatever. Hey, look, it's a multi-layered thing that in a way COVID was a huge gift to a lot of people who have reason to kind of prevent media from getting to where that, you know, they want to get. So, you know, it's an attack on our free press. And as members of the media, we're going to try to fight it and, you know, see what we can come up with.
Spoken like only a Dale Murphy scholar can speak it. Eric Edholm covers the world of the NFL and primarily the draft in a lot of ways at Yahoo Sports. You can find him there. It's the Dandy of Gamma Chi. Is that an Adam Ant reference?
No, it's a Steely Dan reference. Yeah, it's K-19 where he's talking about, you know, he's sort of talking about his glory days.
I got it now. I know the song very well. I was just trying to, I looked at it and I'm like, Dandy. I'm like, that's an Adam and the Ant reference. Okay. Stand and Deliver maybe.
Oh, maybe. I like Adam Ant. I haven't listened to him in a minute, but I know what you're talking about.
It's doggy, 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 dog. Eric, for you with the draft and the value and where we are, let's just stay with the Ravens for our audience here and for, you know, the Eric DaCosta fans here in the next couple of weeks as to what's going to happen. The thing that I noticed at the Super Bowl was Russell Wilson walking through Radio Row on Friday and realizing there are empty seats in places like Pittsburgh and San Francisco and places that might be perceived. I think this quarterback thing is going to be fascinating. That's going to intertwine with tampering. That's going to intertwine with every Calais Campbell and Justin Houston here and Bradley Bozeman, right? It really is more interesting than anything going on with the baseball lockout, more interesting than March Madness, any of these other things happening, NASCAR. To me, the fact that they're not playing baseball, I'm not in Sarasota, I'm through all that. I'm just going to focus on the NFL offseason for what it is, which is this sort of beautiful moving of the chairs. And over the next 8 weeks, a lot's going to happen in the league. Above and beyond Brian Flores and race and the creep that runs the Washington, whatever they call them, like all of that stuff. But the actual football stuff really gets interesting right now.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, I really think that it's, you know, you obviously look at the landscape and see how many different teams need quarterbacks right now. And it's, you know, it's rather surprising, right? I mean, even if you eliminate, you know, the Cleveland Browns with Baker Mayfield and assume they're going to try to see that through. Same with Tua in Miami. And you know, even if, let's say, the Titans stick with Ryan Tannehill or, you know, the Raiders with Derek Carr, there's plenty of those types of guys who are in that, you know, that limbo. Like, could something happen?
Kind of like get a job somewhere else. I mean, Carson Wentz will have a job, right? Garoppolo's going to be somebody's quarterback. He's going to be somebody's this year's Jared Goff, right? I mean, and that's the beauty of this. And then there's a couple of kids coming out in the draft that you're going to tell me about, right? That are going to be the next thing that might be holding the clipboard, right? Like the kid in Green Bay is doing right now.
Right. Yeah. That's the fascinating part to me is, let's say, just big picture, let's say Aaron Rodgers doesn't go anywhere. Let's say, you know, Russell Wilson doesn't approve a trade, or there's, you know, Pete Carroll says, no, we're not trading this guy, whatever it may be. You know, I'm 70 years old. I'm not coaching, you know, whoever we get back in a trade, or Geno Smith or whoever, you know, then you're asking, okay, is Deshaun Watson cleared of his stuff? And all of a sudden, Jimmy Garoppolo, like you said, becomes the hottest guy on the market, right? After everyone trashed him in the playoffs.
Almost as hot as Kirk Cousins was.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty good comparison there, right? I mean, that we made Kirk Cousins into something he wasn't, even though I frankly think he's not terrible, you know? So,
turned Matt Stafford into, you know, chopped liver, right? Now he's got a ring, right? Like, who wanted Matt Stafford? Nobody, right?
And that's another layer to it, right? People will have seen, okay, you go out and put a Stafford, kind of an upper middle class guy, in a first class operation, right? What can happen? Some pretty darn good things. I don't think you'd say Matthew Stafford is an elite quarterback. If you do, you're probably thinking there's 10 or 12 elite quarterbacks in the league, or 8 or 9 anyway. So,
well, yeah, same thing about Derek Carr, but I think Derek Carr could go to the Patriots and probably win a lot of games. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just out loud, right?
Right. And McDaniels is trying to make, you know, the West Coast Patriots out there. So that's fascinating. And yeah, I mean, I think there'll be a lot of teams inclined to sort of say, hey, if we take player X and put him in situation Y, which is where Y is greater than X, and, you know, maybe we can make something out of it. So that's the fascinating situation. But then again, Garoppolo was in a pretty good deal in San Francisco. Good defense, good yards after the catch guys, good offensive line, good head coach with offensive background. How much better can it get for him? So then all of a sudden, this much maligned draft class of quarterbacks where, you know, there's a lot of okay, but not great. You know, some of these guys might end up starting right away. Whereas in a normal situation, we'd be saying, okay, year two, end of year one, you know, let's hold the horses. But if the big dominoes don't start falling, you know, all of a sudden there's some jobs open and not as many people to take them.
Eric at Home is here. He covers all things National Football League and brags on his kids and occasionally throws a rock and roll song and some comedy out on the Twitter thing. You can follow him out at Yahoo Sports as well. For the Ravens and specifically where they are, and man, when Luke and I finally like came up for air and we did like a segment to begin the week, and he read through the infirmary and I, you know, all the injuries. Okay, I know about them. I know about the 6 losses in a row. I know all of that, right? Coaching change on the defensive side, the whole deal. But then he's like, Who's to say where Stanley is or Boyle is or Peters is or Humphrey is? And oh, by the way, Lamar Jackson was hurt. All the running backs were hurt and the yep. center might be gone. And who knows where Calais Campbell is? And Wolf's under contract, but he might not be coming back. And then on and on and on and on and on. And all of a sudden you're like, what are the answers that the Ravens have, let alone the questions? They like their wide receivers more than they have. Other than that, I don't know. They think they have good cornerbacks. They spent a lot of money. Those guys got to get back on the field. They think they have good running backs. They got to get those guys back on the field. But getting everybody back healthy, as they found out last year with Stanley and Boyle, not the recipe that you want to bet on, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, there's no doubt there's an element of, you know, unpredictability with that. And like you mentioned, there's, you know, 10, 11, 12 free agents that arguably should come back or be in play to come back, and underrated guys like Bozeman and Patrick Ricard and people like that. So, you know, I mean, some of the more blue collar guys, I really think for them, it's got to start with having a plan to build back their offensive line a little bit. You know, you trade Orlando Brown, you assume there's going to be a drop off there, but it goes more than that. And with the free agents, that's a, you know, a potential loss there as well. So you got to offset that. And that's a big deal. Pass rush coverage. You know, I would say those are other needs, area of needs. Linebacker, maybe one more. You know, obviously they got gutted at running back, as you mentioned. Got hit with some defensive injuries they couldn't afford. Lamar in and out of the lineup, you know, that was an issue, you know, and just taking as many sacks as he did obviously didn't help. I mean, that was a big deal, I think, for you know, what we saw Lamar, which is some good, some less than what we'd expect at this point. So, yeah, I mean,
with no help around him, right, with no running game around him, and he's the yeah. running game, and he's running the ball 21 times. Dude, I would have told you that was, you know, that wasn't going to work. You know, I mean, and I would have said, you run him 21 times, you're going to get him hurt. And that's what happened. And then you're going to get him hurt. And you're going to be real disappointed and have your feelings hurt that you're not playing football in December and in January because your quarterback's hurt. And you shouldn't stand shocked that your quarterback gets hurt running into linebackers. And I've run through this with every Ron Jaworski, every Greg Cosell, every old coach, new coach. There's a reason no one else did this. And that's not to say it's right or wrong or that Lamar's not going to win three championships.
Right.
But a lot of things have to go right. The other parts have to go right. And everything went wrong last year.
Yeah. I mean, look, you don't expect to lose all the guys they did at a single position like they did. It really did completely change the dynamic, right? Where, you know, all of a sudden you have to pretty much reimagine your run game, which is sort of the lifeline of this team, right? That everything is built off of that. I mean, I know Lamar's obviously his throwing ability has, you know, has been pretty incredible at times, but when the other element isn't working and you don't have that run game humming, you lose your left tackle, you have injuries at running back, boom, that's a recipe for disaster. But here we are, right? And Lamar's banged up as well. So, you know, the offensive identity of the team can come back, right? And I think Dobbins will be in line to have, you know, a good season this year. And you've got Gus and you've got some other pieces that I think will be, you know, beneficial. Ricard, I mentioned, I think is such a linchpin of what they do. I mean, I still feel like they're going to make sure that they insulate that as much as possible this offseason.
Eric at home is here doing all things National Football League, about to see the combine, if there's a combine to be seen, and then the draft coming up. If I were to sit next to you on a bus for three stops and say, all right, tell me about this draft class. Give me the speech that Eric DaCosta is going to give at the Liars Luncheon, where we talk about the highs and the lows. And certainly from our perspective, to think the Steelers looking for a quarterback somewhere in the market, the way it affects the Ravens and where they're drafting. And to your point, the linebacker need, the offensive line need specifically of the Ravens. Who is the top five? Where are we go? What's going to shake out of this thing over the next couple of weeks as we get ready for a Las Vegas draft? How about that we can bet on?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I would say this is probably one of the least Las Vegas-y top tens of all time. And I don't mean that. I want to make sure, like, there's some good football players up there. There's some guys who will make Pro Bowls and such, but it lacks, number one, quarterback punch. We always look for the passers in that area. There may be a couple who get drafted that high, but it won't be your typical quarterback talents who go in that range. You know, it lacks kind of the big name, big play wide receiver. Some of those will come a little later. I just feel like, yes, as strong as it is at offensive tackle, pass rush, I think those are two of the maybe, more in pass rush especially, I would say, is the strongest position. Decent crop of offensive linemen. Corner, I would say, is a pretty strong position overall. Not amazing, but strong. And then it just sort of gets a little murky on both sides of the ball. Running back, decent, not great. Wide receiver, not as good as the last 2 years, but very respectable. Tight end, good, but you got to wait. So it's a lot of that, right? And I think the top end of the draft, the top 10, 11, 12 picks are going to look really ordinary compared to most years' top third of the first round. But that middle class, and really that you know, starting somewhere around the Ravens pick down to about the mid-second round, looks similar to what you would see in a typical year. So the attrition, I don't think, is going to affect teams picking in the you know, 12, 13 and beyond range. But it really is going to change the dynamic for the teams picking ahead of Baltimore and such.
F them picks. Excuse me. What do you make of F them picks
and
winning a Super Bowl? And, you know, as I said, the Washington football team tried this, you know, 20 years ago with Deion Sanders and Bruce Smith and giving money to free agents, and we don't need to pick football players. And I don't know, when you win a Super Bowl that way, someone in the Ravens organization retweeted, you'll never hear Eric DaCosta say that. And I retweeted the picture of, you know, drunk Les Snead saying he's standing on the podium holding the trophy. So you can't say he did it wrong. You know what I mean? You can't say you didn't like the way the chef made the meal. I mean, you know, the meal won the award.
And funny enough, Washington did it about 50 years ago too, with George Allen. They went about a decade without a first round pick. But what separates what the Rams did since about 2017, really since they got aggressive the second they left St. Louis, I'm sure that makes the Missouri folks very happy. But as soon as they moved west, Les Snead changed dynamics, or changed his viewpoint.
Some would say he started to try to win.
Yeah, right. And I mean, like, it's almost like the Moneyball movie, right? Where you see Billy Beane just overnight have kind of a philosophy change. Well, this sort of happened in a way to Les Snead. And it's not just get rid of all your draft picks. You have to have an infrastructure in place, A. And then B, he's trading down. I mean, they had 45 draft picks over the last 5 years. You know, teams like Baltimore, they get a lot of compensatory picks. You know, the Vikings have historically had a lot of picks. There are certain teams that collect them. You know, they're right there with them in terms of total number of picks. The difference is fewer first-rounders, almost none since Jared Goff in 16. Fewer day two and day three picks, but some, you know, kind of middle of the road, but they lead the league in day three picks. So what you're really doing is you're counting on your area scouts, you're counting on your scouting director, you're counting on your over-the-top scouts, your senior scouts, to really drill down and find the hidden values that trickle into rounds 4, 5, 6, 7, and of course, undrafted free agency as well. And it requires a high level of trust. Theoretically, a team like Baltimore could do it because, you know, there's no staff that A is probably man, you know, to a man more impressive than the Ravens. And also the deepest bench. I mean, they've got like 30 personnel people who work for them. It's probably the biggest scouting department in the NFL, I think, by manpower. So, I mean, the question is, and they've done it a little bit.
Well, right? That's where Matt Judon happens. That's where Za'Darius Smith happens. These guys that make a lot of money, Ryan Jensen, guys that got 50, 60, $80 million contracts out of Baltimore, Rick Wagner, all of that happened because they scouted second and third day. And that's how Mark Andrews happens when you miss on Hayden Hurst, right?
Yep. Orlando Brown, Mark Andrews, Dennis Pitta going back. I mean, right. You can list all the guys. That's really where they've had their most success, I would say. Yes, strong in the upper rounds as well. I mean, Baltimore's not unimpeachable, but they have about as solid a draft record as you can find. A couple holes here and there. Everybody has them, but
everybody has a Matt Elam and a Travis Taylor mixed in there, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. You're not. Nobody's perfect, right? Even the great Ozzie Newsome. But yeah, it's so true.
And even Sergio Kindle. I've been here a long time. I can play that game all night with you. Wait, if we go quarterbacks, you know, oh my.
Yeah, right. Yeah, bowler. That was the question about Ozzie for so long, was can he scout a quarterback, right? And then he finds Joe and then goes to the complete end of the opposite end of the spectrum and they find Lamar. And
well, the wide receiver thing here forever, right? With Perryman, all of that, right? And it feels like now Eric finally feels confident that like they got a couple of wide receivers. Now they got to get an offensive line. So, you know, it's whack-a-mole. It's the NFL, Eric, at home.
That's right. And I think Bateman is going to end up looking like a really good pick. I need to go back and watch how he played down the stretch. And I just want to cross my eyes and or dot my I's and cross my T's. But I feel pretty good about that one. I think they're going to be end up being happy about it. So yeah, it's all about when your big picture vision of the draft, it's all about your risk assessment, the structure of your roster, the salary structure, you know, of your window to win and things like that. And also your willingness to kind of pull the trigger on these atypical moves. Good for Les Snead, making it work. There were plenty of people around the league who scoffed at it, but the Ravens approach can work too. We've seen that do well at times. You know, we've seen other teams, you know, the Bengals, after all these years of not spending a nickel, they go out and have two back-to-back years where they spend a lot of money on defense. And guess what? That was a big reason why they were there. So it just proves that team building is not a one-track highway. There are lots of lanes you can take.
Last thing for you, because you cover such things on the inside. Eric at home, of course, our guest from Yahoo Sports. You can follow him for all Dale Murphy inside information as well. The Lamar contract thing. As much as it's talked about as will he, won't he, what will it be, how will it relate to, you know, the money that Mahomes gets or whatever, the fact that you represent yourself and your mother and there's no grown-ups and what that means for the Ravens from a cap number that they'd like to maybe get it done. I don't know where that number would be. It's high risk either way with a running quarterback, I believe. So maybe they want to play the – you know, we're just going to franchise you and give you $42 million or whatever it is instead of going long play. I think they have a, as you pointed out, the Ravens have a plan for everything, but the plan to negotiate with a kid who doesn't really know what he's doing when negotiating, although he probably thinks he does. That's a wild card. The Ravens have to deal with it. Green Bay has its problem with its diva quarterback, and Seattle has, everybody's got a diva quarterback problem, right? Not some of its jurisprudence in Houston, which is a problem you don't want to have. But this is a uniquely interesting negotiation here, right?
I think so. Right. And I think it's probably the most fascinating quarterback negotiation probably since Mahomes. And maybe that was a little bit after the fact, because Mahomes signed such an unusual deal, 10 years, $450 million. We didn't really know what to think of this thing at first. And then after Josh Allen signed his extension, everybody went, Pat may have locked himself in on this one. This is the great Lee Steinberg, right? I mean, who was for years and years the number one agent, unquestioned, faded from the scene, dealt with his personal issues, came back, has had a roaring, you know, comeback in his own career. But I think you can certainly look at that as compared to other top quarterback contracts and say, yeah, it looks good on paper, but is it the best deal for Patrick? That sort of thing. Now you focus on Lamar and you say, it wouldn't shock me if this thing is a little bit unusual, if it doesn't have some of the same characteristics of what we see from other top quarterbacks in their second deal, usually 4 or 5 year contract. You know, usually you work off the comps, right? What's happened most recently, the last couple of deals, and sort of build it off that. It's a lot like real estate. There's not a huge difference there, but it's so tough to comp Lamar to anybody else, right? And obviously it comes down to franchise quarterback. What age are you? You know, that those things are important. But at the same time, I don't know that it's anything that is a one-for-one, tit-for-tat kind of comparison. So Mahomes might be the guy who's out-of-the-box deal maybe gives us a little bit of a window into what Lamar signs. I don't think he'll sign a 10-year deal necessarily, but the structure of Mahomes' deal was quite unusual in a lot of respects. And, you know, maybe because of Lamar's inexperience or his lack of, you know, negotiating knowledge, where he takes a little bit less early and then kind of builds up to a bigger base salary. I don't know what it's going to look like, but I've heard the 5-year kind of 200 plus million range. It's going to be over $40 million per year. And based on the way the salary cap keeps trending back up again, that should be right in line with what NFL teams are expected to pay for those kind of players.
Eric Edholm covers all things draft, combine, and the National Football League out of Yahoo Sports. Always great to visit with you, man. It's been a little while, and I was hoping to see some old friends at the Super Bowl, and I did. And for those of you who weren't around, I find you on the Zoom thing, and hopefully we'll find you over a nice big fat piece of pizza in Chicago sometime soon, brother.
I'm looking forward to that. You bet. Absolutely. Anytime, man. You let me know.
You got it. Eric Edholm joining us here. Just, bring Tom Petty back to Wrigley or something, or Pearl Jam or something, but yes. Something that's alive, please. McCartney playing Oriole Park here. So
yeah,
that even got John Angelos onto a Zoom last week. So you bring the Beatles back. I am Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.